Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of March, recording at 8:43 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, a quick review of the week. Stock markets really barely steady for the most part. In other words, most of them moved a bit lower. The weaker markets have been such as Wall Street in terms of not overall declines from their highs, but in terms of the recent trading ranges are still testing those lows, including today. Today was a down day for Wall Street ranging from 1.6 on the Dow to 2.26 on the NASDAQ. That's percent. And there are exceptions, of course. The resources markets remain very, very strong overall. And we see a number of those indices pushing to new high grounds, particularly the smaller markets, some of the Middle Eastern and particularly the African stock markets. But among the big boys, the Rios and the Tintos and so on, and other top mining companies are certainly not experiencing any bear market, although they are all susceptible to the Wall Street leash effect from time to time, but tend to bounce back more quickly. Okay, moving on. Government bonds. It's been a strong week in here, because particularly for the U.S. Treasuries, because stock markets have been soft. Now, I should mention also in the stock markets, China has continued to ease. It's no rout, that's for sure, and it has pulled back a long way, getting towards some interesting support levels, but it is still easing. And in terms of the U.S. dollar, well, that's been a big story this week. We're getting some dollar acceleration on the downside, or I should say a pickup in the rate of the dollar's decline. That might be a little more accurate. That is a mild form of acceleration, in other words. And that has been generally bullish for metal markets, but they have also appreciated against all currencies, and this is the first week in which the dollar is going to close out above the $1,000 level. It's currently at 1,003. And the, let's see, and among other precious metals, well, platinum was down today, and so is palladium, but gold and silver showing some good strength. Now, in agricultural commodities, a little bit more choppy. Some declines today. Firmer tone in lumber, but that's got some motoring to do to be clearly in a support building, base building process. I think it is, but today, but the technical action is mixed. Today it was up $3.80, that is. And crude oil, well, it had been hitting highs pretty well all week, and it's not far off. I think yesterday's high about at 111, it's at 110.22. Natural gas caught some profit taking in here today. It's back under $10, but that had been quite strong earlier in the week. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, what we continue to see is a massive deleveraging, and we also see the potential buyers cowering a bit in here, or many of them at any rate, not surprising. And we also see that during this deleveraging process, we're seeing central banks pump in a phenomenal amount of that liquidity. Now, that liquidity can go anywhere. It can sit in a bank account, it can go into bonds, it can go into equities, it can go into commodities. And we've certainly seen plenty of it flow into commodities. I don't think that that will change significantly. And I would ultimately expect the lion's share of that liquidity, though, to find its way into stock markets. And with it being a global beauty contest, it will go into the stock markets that are viewed as most attractive. At some point, there will be some bargain hunting in the U.S. Market because people feel that the dollar has fallen low enough, and therefore, even though U.S. valuations are not certainly not among the great bargains, you see Owen's yield report here today. He, in doing a survey, I think he only came up with six companies in the S&P and NASDAQ that were trading with a dividend yield of 4% or higher that was twice covered. And that's interesting, whereas Europe had lots of them. Now, but I'll leave that. You'll be able to check through that report itself over the weekend if you're interested. And I do commend it to you because I think one of the improvements, and there are a number of improvements here if you take a medium to longer term view, is that a lot of attractive valuations and including yields are appearing. Now, the press is of course obsessed with the awfulness of the various stories, which include collapsing hedge funds. Those are the ones for the most part that were involved with the big debt leveraged positions, but collapsing hedge funds, reeling banks, even collapsing banks in the case of Bear Stearns having to be rescued, and endless speculation about the write-downs. Additional write-downs, write-offs to occur. So that's pretty well hogged all the headlines, but let's think about this for a moment. I mentioned that a lot of liquidity is being pumped into the system to offset the effects of some of this deleveraging. Now, for investors, the deleveraging is really a very good thing on a medium to longer term basis because what it's doing is it's reducing the risk. Okay, you can't reduce the risk without creating some chaos in the market but through as a result of this deleveraging process. But looking ahead, that will put markets on a much more stable footing than they have been for some time. Now, of course, people want to know how much shock and awe are we going to see in addition to what you probably feel has been appearing on a daily basis. I don't know the answer to that, but I am greatly heartened by the sentiment indicators. The sentiment indicators say that these markets, the ones that are still weak, are really quite close to an important bottom. And of course, the one that counts in here in those stakes is Wall Street, because it's the negative Wall Street leash effect, and it's the fear of all the bad news and contagion emanating from that bad news coming out of the U.S. that has so alarmed people. Now, as I say, the sentiment indicators, and I've published a number of them, and you want to see the one that I think was posted on, was it Wednesday? That's the one from our sister company, Investors Intelligence, in the U.S. That's an important one. But then we had the others that I've mentioned before and posted previously. Back in January, we had U.S. insider buying, net insider buying, for the first time since 1995. We had the highest short interest ratio since the 1930s. That was an extremely important one. We've had, of course, this crescendo of bearish headlines, and I've got a good article that another thoughtful subscriber had forwarded. Really good article dealing with Well, taking very much a behavioral, contrarian, view, written by Cliff Droke, who I corresponded with today, and who is certainly familiar with Fuller Money, and I told him I was going to post that an article of his. It's called George Soros and the Worst Financial Market Crisis in 60 Years. Well, if George Soros is right, and it is the worst financial crisis in 60 years, excuse me, I have a little drink here. Now, I don't think it is, but he's no fool. Needless to say, billionaires have found their way around markets quite effectively. But I think there's a whole lot of hyperbole in that. I think, in fairness to George, he's probably talking mainly about the U.S. economy. But of course, shockwaves do ripple out from that and hit Europe, and of course some of the subprime type lending that had caused some such problems for the U.S. Was replicated in Australia, in the U.K. for sure, in Ireland, and if no doubt a few other economies. But this is not a global crisis. It's not affecting, to any extent, the real growth engines of the globe. China and India, all of developing, or as I prefer to say, progressing Asia, is doing extremely well. So if this is the worst financial market crisis in 60 years, don't tell it to those people. And we're not even going to get a global recession, in my view. Now, if I'm talking nonsense and this is going to turn out to be the worst financial market crisis in 60 years for not just U.S. banks, but a whole lots of other financial sectors all around the globe, then the sentiment indicators that are currently really quite bullish will be premature, to put it mildly, but I wouldn't bet on that. I'll back the sentiment indicators at this stage, and I take great confidence in the fact that, or derive great confidence from the fact that the rest of the global economy, outside of Europe and the USA, is really doing extremely well. And of course, I want to invest in those companies for the for the most part. Now, what about some of these other economies? What about Asia? Well, we got a problem. But what about Japan, rather? Japan has a governance problem, and therefore, again, it's interesting. The market is cheaper than it has been previously, but it's not a screaming steal. Among global markets, I would say in the global beauty contest, it's somewhere in the upper middle to well middle of the pecking order. Overall, depends what you're looking for. If you're going on a basis of valuations, it's very much in the middle. If you go on the basis of potential, it's probably a little better. Then it's probably upper middle in terms of prospects. If you compare it to Asia's progressing economies, well, they look considerably more attractive to me. What we do also have in Asia, which is not helping investors who are long there right now, is the China leash effect. I've talked about that less than the Wall Street leash effect. But China's leash effect will be a growing influence, and I suspect will eventually become more important than the Wall Street leash effect, although not for quite some time. But China's, on a global basis, that is, but within Asia, China's leash effect is already a big influence, and that Chinese market is still weakening. Now, I th think, it, well, it's coming back to towards some rather interesting support levels on the charts, but more importantly, it's got to show a support building phase and break the medium-term downward trend that's in play there. Now, getting back to I'm jumping around a little bit, so I apologies for that. But getting back to this subject of yield, that's one of the big pluses in the market. Have a look at Owen's report. Some of you may have done some other additional work on this subject, or you may see some good work either in reports that are produced or in press articles, and we're interested in that sort of thing, because a number of investors certainly do want to have a good yield component to their equity portfolios, and this is the time to be thinking about that. Even though we don't have any confirmation that these weak stock markets, which are throwing up the best yields right now, are we don't have confirmation that they have actually seen their final lows during this setback. My guess is that even if a collapse or two of another hedge fund or another bank, even if that pushes Wall Street lower, that it won't maintain it for very long, and we will see, of course, that both the Treasury and the Fed doing everything they can to cushion the downside risk, and they have formidable tools at their disposal. And we also have a section of the US economy that's doing exceptionally well, and that of course is the multinationals. And they are selling abroad and consolidating earnings in weak dollars. And they're in, and these are very successful companies. So that's a hot area. I don't like the domestic economy. And I suspect that that will experience a very long convalescence. Okay, moving on from equities, what about these long-dated government bonds? So I mentioned yesterday that I felt that the Fed might contrive to keep the long-dated bond market firm, its prices, in other words, yields down for longer than might otherwise be the case. We saw a period last month when the bond market weakened, as treasury, long-dated treasuries weakened quite sharply because of inflation fears, and there certainly are big inflation risks there, and it snapped back up quite rapidly. Well, I doubt that it was SWFs bidding them up. I suspect it was the Fed. Because some of us were talking about shorting opportunities, and we're actually shorting those markets. And the Fed wants the U.S. bond, long-dated government bond yields to stay low. That helps to keep pressure off mortgages in terms of upward revisions. And most importantly for them, it enables the banks to recapitalize through the yield curve, as I've described on so many occasions. But suffice it to say, when the global economy is expanding rather than this gentle contraction overall, but sharp contraction in the US economy, UK economies, the European economies, when that's over and when global growth is picking up again, we can expect those bond yields to push up some fair way. And I suspect that we're going to be in an environment where we will see not a replay of that 2003 through 2006 into early 2007 period, where we had quite moderate inflation and we had those nice smooth upward trends for stock markets. I suspect the environment that we are in will produce plenty of uptrends, but they will tend to be of more medium-term duration, and they will be followed by, and they might well be steeper, but then they will also be followed by some quite sharp reactions. In other words, I think that the higher volatility will remain. In terms of the economic cycles, I think we may see a more rapid move between periods of rising interest rates and declining interest rates. And the main reason behind this, I think, is the inflation problems caused by all of these commodity markets, from the industrial resources, of which the energy sector is the most crucial one for most people, through the foods. And the foods are certainly important, and it's an emotive subject. So I think we will need to get used to a fair amount of volatility. I don't think that we will see big bear markets. I'm hoping we will avoid this on the basis that this these credit crunch problems have slowed and lengthened the cycle. But I think you can expect, as I say, some sharp medium-term rallies and some pretty sharp medium-term corrections going forward over the next few years, and that those who, for some reason, insist on defining a bear market as a 20% correction, well, you'll see quite easily at least one, and sometimes more of those within a calendar year. We get into this more choppy activity, but not everything will move on that basis. And I think that, for instance, my worst case scenario would be that the weaker the regressing economies just had their stock market indices moving sideways in this big band. In other words, few months on the upside, few months on the downside, seldom more than a year in terms of the uptrend, some sharper significant corrections, lasting 3, maybe 6 months, that type of activity. Now, one can't be sure of this, but I feel that the fundamental background suggests this. Now, the progressing emerging markets will be no less volatile, but I think they'll be volatile if, for instance, the regressing developed country stock markets were basically within sideways, broad sideways trading ranges, that the progressing emerging markets would be within jagged upward trends. And that will be a very important difference. So how do we actually play it? Well, you can ride the good themes, and I certainly think the fuller money themes will continue to perform. These are secular themes, once in a generation, in other words. One can ride those from an unleveraged investment standpoint. And tactically, though, the time to buy is following the shakeouts. We've often said that even before all of this volatility, the best time to buy our favorite themes was following market corrections or at least reactions. And those who want a more actively managed portfolio can trade out of some of those positions or jam in tight stops if they look to be doing almost too well. If they look to be too good to be true, they probably are sort of things, or jam up a stop or start to take profits into that real strength. With my investment portfolio, I don't expect myself to make many changes because I like what I have. If I make a change, it'll be because something does something silly on the upside, and or has had such a good move overall that I'm inclined to get out. Might be gold shares, but not at these levels, not yet. Okay. What else to mention? The resources. A lot of people are wanting to pile into commodity funds. This is a secular theme, but I have concerns about this. One, these markets were not meant to attract billions and billions of investment and speculative capital. Yes, there have been futures markets for a very, very long time, but that was mainly to help to maintain liquid markets. We have never seen a similar degree of investment interest in resources as we have today, and this will lead to some problems, particularly if it looks like investors and speculators are either intentionally, or even if they're unintentionally, appear to be cornering these markets. We may, if this becomes a social issue, and I suspect it will at some stage, a populist issue, then we may get some measures to try to drive some of that investment and speculation out of the markets. I wouldn't be surprised, and it's hardly surprising. Maybe governments would take more of a laid-back view about bubbles in various different sectors of the stock market, but if they think speculators are creating bubbles in wheat and corn prices and so on, I don't think they're going to sit on their hands against that background. Now, on the commodity front, here I think that we're still at a latter stage of this precious metals cycle in terms of the medium-term cycle, not the long-term secular uptrend, but it might and it might well be over for we might have already seen the medium-term peak in platinum. Now, I think that gold and silver have the best chance of moving higher, and I'm content to play that, but I am concerned about this prospect of dollar intervention. I've written about that a bit today. It's been very much in the news today, and people are talking about multilateral intervention to support the dollar. Now, just to slow up its downtrend in all probability, we could well see that at some point in the next few weeks, and I'm sufficiently concerned about it to have closed out today a gold long position in one of my spread bet accounts. This is just a futures position in one of my accounts that does not have 24 hours trading, and switched that trade over to another account that does have 24-hour trading, because the central banks might do a little bit of jawboning, as we've seen all along individually, but the whole purpose of intervention to get the biggest bang for your buck, as it were, is to surprise the market, traumatize the people who are shorting the dollar, so that they are forced to cover shorts, and then that a number of their trading systems that will give them a momentum signal to go long the dollar, create a big technical rally. I think you would see knee-jerk reactions in a lot of these commodities, and not least the precious metals. So I don't want to get caught if that happens in an account that doesn't carry a 24-hour-a-day stop for me. So that's what I've done. I'm certainly content to play the gold with a reasonably tight stop, but only in an account where I would be protected should the intervention occur outside of the West's main trading hours. And I think that's pretty much it for now. Interesting week. No doubt the stock market debate will continue, but seeing ever more articles on the credit crunch, I don't think actually contributes a whole lot more to our thinking. That's a story that is well and truly out in the market, and I've been saying recently that I actually think that the weakness of the dollar and the strength of some of these commodities, not least crude oil, has probably given serious investors a little bit more pause for thought recently than the latest credit card credit crunch issues. Well, credit card problems there as well, of course. So, that's pretty much it for another week. Hope we have a relaxing, restful weekend. I aim to do that, but also some catch-up work in the office on all these emails that you've been sending me. I haven't been able to get to all of them, can't get to all of them. Going forward, we might do some of the emails in a separate audio, just to we do read them. We certainly don't want to ignore them. We are particularly interested, of course, in emails of general interest. All the best. Have a great weekend.